Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. Today's Issues, the name of this program, here on the American Family Radio Network. Tim with Walker and Steve Jordahl now joining us. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you, sir?
I'm well.
Go ahead.
The thing that's catching my attention right now, as we speak, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 942 points. It's taking a huge hit, and it's because of the coronavirus, or they're calling it now COVID-19 virus, which is on the verge of spinning out of control. They've got a lot of people now in Iran and Italy. People are dying. I was reading this morning, health officials are saying that they are no longer able, it's spreading so fast, they're not able to go back to patient zero and find out how it's being transmitted.
Well, the symptoms, correct me if I'm wrong, but you may have somebody who has the virus, right?
Yeah.
And they're not symptomatic for
a week or two. Mm-hmm. It could be.
So, and they're a carrier at the time,
sure.
Right?
They're contagious, yes.
So, now we don't have a serious problem with that here in the U.S. yet.
No.
And hopefully we won't.
Well, hopefully we won't. We're taking measures. But here's how it might affect us. There's reports that about 150 prescription drugs that we use here, antibiotics and generic drugs and some branded drugs, there might be a shortage of some of these drugs, because a lot of the raw materials that we get to use those drugs are found in China, and they're being used in China. And
so, yeah, I think overall, I don't want to overhype this. I think overall that the world will be able to ride this storm out. But I'll say this. What makes this, when you look at the death rate, it's no worse than the flu. It's actually, the flu is actually more deadly. SARS was more deadly. You had a 9 or 10% death rate with SARS.
With what now?
SARS as a respiratory disease.
Gotcha. Yeah, I remember that.
This presents a lot like SARS.
2003. Yeah. So, but what makes it, why people are concerned about this is because it's new and we don't really know how to treat it yet. So that's, with flu, you can go and get Tamiflu and be better in about 2 days, sometimes less. But with this, we don't know what to do with it.
Right.
So that's where the concern is. But back to the production or the supply from China, things like this, and this stuff rarely ever happens. The last time something similar was SARS, and that was 2003. So we've been going.
You had Ebola.
Yeah, you have Ebola in
about
Africa.
5 years ago, you remember that?
Yeah. So
but that really never got out of Western Sub-Saharan
Africa.
Yeah,
we were able to contain it. The world was, but this is affecting production in China, and China does produce a lot of materials. You mentioned prescription drugs, so I'm hoping in the long run that this will help us, the U.S.
But you're saying the Dow Jones is down today because of fears about the coronavirus spreading?
That this is going to hurt the world economy.
Okay.
That economic ramifications of this virus, because China's taking a huge hit in their economy, is in recession now because of this. And if China goes into the tank, that kind of reverberates around the world and markets around the world. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 962.63 points down right now. 3%.
Has it ever been documented how this all started?
Well, there's debate about that. There's a congressman here, and I believe
Senator Tom Cotton.
Tom Cotton,
of Arkansas,
says that there is a lab that's pretty close to a food market in Wuhan, China, where this started, where they engineer and look at these diseases to try to find drugs for them or try to figure out how to treat them or maybe to weaponize them. Who knows? That's a possibility he's not ruling out. And they're saying it could have been an accidental leak from that. Someone and the lab got sick and then started spreading it there. That's what they're
saying. This is a one-of-a-kind lab for China in Wuhan. And the coronavirus is one of the viruses that they study there. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese government, they first came out and said, that this originated from a seafood market. But now they're coming out, the Chinese government is, and saying, well, maybe it didn't. Maybe it made its way into the seafood market from somewhere else,
right,
and then spread. So it's very suspicious and very likely, actually, well, that this leaked out of that lab.
I've talked to some people, and y'all have too, and people have various opinions on this. Some folks think this was biological warfare.
That has not been ruled out.
But the only problem, maybe not the only problem, in other words, the idea would be, and I know this, some people believe this, that China would have done this intentionally to create havoc. Maybe they didn't intend it to be. Maybe they were creating this virus to have it released somewhere else in a biological warfare. I know this is getting black helicopter stuff here, but I mean, that's what some people believe.
Sure.
And I wouldn't. And now, biological warfare is not crazy.
No.
Okay. No, that's
But the problem I have with this being intentional is this is having more devastating effects on China than anywhere else.
Absolutely.
So yes. I don't know why you would do that to your own people and your own government if you're trying to inflict damage on the world, so to speak.
No, it doesn't make sense. I believe it to be accidental in China. I don't know what their purpose was for having it there in the first place.
You're so this
right.
is a yeah. created a created virus?
No, they don't know. The coronavirus is symptomatic. The corona, which is kind of Latin for crown, I guess. And this virus, if you look at it under a microscope, it has little fingers or tentacles that reach out that look like a crown, which is why they call it a coronavirus. Oh, okay. And there's many of those types of coronaviruses. They've renamed this one COVID-19, which is specific to the one that's running rampant now.
But it was controlled up until 3 months ago.
It was controlled up until 3 months ago. And I don't know if they created it or they discovered it. They could have engineered it, or they might have just – I mean, epidemiologists – delve into this stuff, and there's legitimate reasons to have that. I mean, there's a lab somewhere in the United States that has
polio. What is an
polio
epidemiologist? What do they study?
Diseases.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we will. But right now, you're saying the stock market is down, and the thinking is it's because of the threats of the coronavirus.
971, and it's definitely because of worries about the global economy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We've been talking about, I don't know, you guys have been talking about Bernie Sanders and his socialist bent.
And his quest.
His quest. The quest he's on.
To be the leader of the...
One ring to rule them all, I think, is what it is.
I wouldn't say free world with him anymore.
Right.
Leader of the whatever world he would create, socialist world.
Well, here's what he's doing. He made a decision today, and he said that he is not going to attend the AIPAC conference this year. Now, AIPAC is the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. It's a pro-Israel lobby group that really has bipartisan support, or at least it did, up until fairly recently. And he said, and this is his statement, the Israeli people have a right to live in peace and security. So do the Palestinian people. I remain concerned about the platform AIPAC provides for leaders who express bigotry and oppose basic Palestinian rights. For that reason, I will not attend their conference. As president, I will support the rights of both Israelis and Palestinians to do everything possible to bring peace and security to the region. AIPAC responded, saying that the move was an odious attack and truly shameful. So, Bernie not going to be a friend of Israel, doesn't look like, should he get elected?
No, he won't be. Now, despite the fact that he is of Jewish descent.
Yeah.
But he's an atheist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah.
He's an atheist with Jewish ancestry.
And it's kind of symptomatic of that, the far left, the squad. You remember the squad? You remember Rashida Tlaib from Michigan?
Yeah.
She had a map in her, or she has or had a map in her office where she had a post-it note over Israel and she renamed it Palestine.
Mm. Yeah. These people
It's a pretty common trend now.
They want it off the map.
These people are hostile to Israel. They're hostile to America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're hostile to any system or any country that has a Judeo-Christian heritage.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I just kind of curious to me. I know this is a question we could spend an hour or two on, especially with maybe somebody like Frank Turek, may ask him about this, but why is it that socialism and communism, for the most part, is supported by people who are atheists?
Well, it's a chicken and the egg question, I'm sure, because communism, you cannot have it's an atheistic worldview. You can't really be a communist and believe in God, because God grants people individual special rights. He grants us humanity. We're created in God's image. Right. We can't have that kind of communism. Needs to do away with singling out people as valuable. They're only valuable as a collective.
That's why communist countries crack down on religion.
Absolutely.
Of all kinds.
Absolutely.
Because it promotes liberty.
But I guess I'm wondering what motivates a man like Bernie Sanders, who's what, 78? Something like 76, 77?
Somewhere in there, yeah.
What motivates him to be for all the things he's for if he's going to die in just a few years and go back to being Earth?
Well,
I mean, worm food.
Well, people like the saint, you could say the same thing about why do atheists fight so hard for unbelief? But the fundamental view that they have is the state is the end-all, be-all. So that is their God, is the state. And so they work day in and day out to increase the power of the state.
Yeah, but the things that they say they champion, I'm talking about the socialists and communists, are things they say improve the human condition, right? That's what they say.
Yes.
That's what they say. We don't believe that, and proof is there otherwise, but that's what they would tell
you. It's never been done successfully, let's just say that.
That's what they would tell you. But it just, as I said, it's just curious to me. Don't spend too much time on it. But why, if you're an atheist and this is all there is, you know what I'm saying? For Christians, you're motivated to live your life for God.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to try to follow the Bible, understanding that there is a judgment after death. Did you follow God and trust in Jesus, or did you not? And there's going to be eternal consequences. And you're going to be rewarded in heaven by God for your good deeds on earth. Am I right?
Yes. Yeah. And if you take out...
Your good deeds don't earn you a place in heaven. Don't misunderstand me. That's only the blood and sacrifice of Jesus Christ. I mean, that's the central message of the Christian faith. And that's why Jesus came to earth. Mm-hmm. But he also came to earth to show us how to live. Yeah.
Right. Obedience.
So we're rewarded for that. So I'm saying, so we get up every day, we Christians get up every day, and we don't always succeed, but our desire, if you follow Christ, is to serve him, to please him, and so our just reward will be there for us one day. But for the atheist, this is all there is. There is no God to answer to. There's no afterlife. There's no... there's no higher being other than yourself.
Right.
So what do you care about anything? Hardly.
There's a human need to be important. Communism.
Where does that come from?
It comes from God, but communism can't wipe it out. And so the need to do something, the need to create, the need to be creative, to leave behind a legacy. Right. I think it's something that God put in us so that we would work hard and improve ourselves and the world that he's given us.
Yeah, and we can't forget spiritual warfare and the spiritual struggle that we have. People are not just motivated spiritually by good things.
Yeah.
There's spiritual darkness that pull people in the wrong direction. And I think that's what Christians are pulled in the right direction spiritually, but there's lost people, atheists included. I mean, look at all the evil dictators we've had over the world history. Yeah. And you ask, well, what makes them so motivated? Well, you have to factor in spiritual darkness.
Yes, that's true. And there is a motivation. If you're not going to follow God and the Bible, which Jesus taught us selflessness, right? In other words, to do for others above ourselves. That too is a fundamental teaching of Christianity. Well, for a communist or a statist or a totalitarian view, It's hedonism. And hedonism, meaning, I guess, the comfort and pleasures of the here and now, right? Human is a motivating factor for a lot of these people, because if you're the premier of China, for example, that word I use also as dictator, this is the way...
It's power.
It's power.
Yes.
The power to control people and money puts you above them and gives you a life better than theirs and gives you a life of comfort while you're on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Knowing that, you know, when you die, there's nothing else to look forward to, so why not live it up here and now?
I suppose. That's
good. Anyway.
Where you put it.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Yes.
So that philosophy.
You know, this is an argument that's been around a while. I want to play you some sound of...
Which argument?
The socialism. Whether socialism as opposed to free market capitalism. This is Ronald Reagan from back in the day. He was talking about a story. And then I have Newt Gingrich, who's commenting on socialism. This is cut two.
Speaking to some students the other day, I referred to freedoms lost in this land during my lifetime. And I got a question. What freedoms? What was I talking about? It reminded me of a TV play I'd once done in which I played a Soviet major during the occupation of Budapest. In the play, I turned out to be something of a nice fellow and let two Hungarians go with this line. I never knew what freedom was until I saw you lose yours.
I think that the number one characteristic of socialism is it fails. Bernie Sanders doesn't want to talk about it, but Venezuela, Cuba, Zimbabwe... These are places that tried socialism, and they were total disasters. He would like to pretend that he would be a Scandinavian socialist, but there are no Scandinavian socialists. Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and Norway are very capitalist countries. They have a large welfare state, but they're not socialist in any realistic way.
Hmm. Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's what you get with Bernie Sanders is not what you're going to get in Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, next topic.
Steve. All right. You had a bunch of Republicans in Southern California thanking Adam Schiff. Yeah, they are. In fact, one of the guys is Eric Early. He is running against Adam Schiff, and he put out this commercial. This is cut three.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
Congressman, thank you.
Hey, Adam Schiff. Republicans in California, thank you for helping them reelect President Trump.
And this is exactly what they did, too. What he did.
Wow.
Well, the election hasn't been held yet, right?
No, but yeah.
But there's no question that people believe, the majority of people believe that the impeachment.
It did not help the Democrats.
Right.
That the Democrats went after President Trump on actually backfired on them.
It did.
Yeah, big time.
It did. Hey, Dana Lash, one of our one of the contributors on Fox that we kind of follow, she's got some good stuff, but she's got a book coming out. Mm-hmm. The book is called Grace Canceled. I cannot recommend it because I haven't seen it, but I want you to let her tell you a little bit about what might be in it. This is cut six.
I was actually inspired because of a Norm Macdonald quote when he was talking about Roseanne Barr, and he said that people used to apologize and then they were forgiven and then they could go back to rebuilding the relationship. But our culture incentivizes withholding forgiveness. We incentivize withholding redemption, and so no one wants to apologize because it's just looked at as surrender or compromise. And so we're not getting anywhere. But I also discussed social justice warriorism within the church. So I can't wait for those emails. And I also get into the whole argument that you can't vote for Trump and still be a Christian, which I reject. And if they're trying to make that argument biblically, you're wrong and it's unchristian.
Hmm. This just could be a good read when that comes out.
Yeah. She hit on a lot of topics
there. Yeah, I know, right?
You know?
She is is she still the national spokesperson for the NRA?
No, she's former. I mean, she's still an advocate of gun rights, but she's not working for them anymore.
Okay.
Can I tell you the story, the good feel-good story of the day? We have time for that, right?
We got 5 minutes.
Okay, well, let's talk hockey. I wish that...
This is a good one.
I wish that my friend and boss Fred were here, because this is for him and Ed, who you know are very big hockey fans. I did not know this until last night, but apparently at every NHL game, there is an emergency goalie that's in the stands. He's hired by or paid by the NHL, and if the teams only carry two goalies, he carry a primary goalie and a backup. If for some reason both of them get blown out in a game and injured, then they call on this goalie who could go to either team. Just depends on which one needs him. Huh. Well, it happened. It happened last night in Toronto.
That is an odd rule. That is an odd situation. Mm-hmm. So you're telling me there at every National Hockey League game, there is a person sitting in the stands, unbeknownst to the rest of the crowd, that in case of an emergency, that being two goalies kicked out of the game or out with injury, then he comes out of the stands and puts on a hockey goalie uniform and takes his place in front of the goal.
See, now in baseball, you run out of pitchers. You put your shortstop in, and
that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Why can't one of the other hockey players?
No, they got an emergency goalie.
Okay, so what happened?
Well, what happened was this was in Canada, but he was it was the Hurricanes.
That name fits. The Canadian Hurricanes.
No.
Good night. Come on, people.
What's Cincinnati, was it?
It's like Tulsa, Golden Hurricane.
It's the Florida Hurricanes down there. I'm sorry. Okay. Carolina Hurricanes. My bad. I'm not the hockey fan. And they were up in Toronto playing the Maple Leafs.
Gotcha.
And so he went in to play for the Hurricanes, and he let two goals get in during the second period. And he told his team in the middle of the third period, if you guys score some goals, I promise I'll shut them out in the third period. They scored some goals. He shut them out and won the game. I want you to just listen to this. Listen to what he had to say after the game.
I was excited at first, and then I step on the ice, and then you're nervous. You take a few shots, two goals go in right away. Get a little nervous again, and thinking to myself, make a save, do something, don't embarrass yourself. Let's have some fun, and the players do the same thing. I just said, let's hold it down on the third. So if you guys get another goal here, I'll be ready to go in the third. I'll hold it down on the third period. And we came out and they played unreal in front of me, and we ended up getting the win.
David Ayers, a Zamboni driver, 42 years old.
Better tell folks
what a kidney transplant.
You better tell folks who don't know hockey what a Zamboni machine is.
Zamboni is that big machine that goes out and smooths the ice in between periods or when the ice rink gets a little too choppy. It kind of scrapes the top of the ice off and makes it all smooth. And so, but this is the NHL tweeted out, to be clear, David Ayers is tonight's emergency goalie. He's 42, a Zamboni driver, and he's had a kidney transplant.
Wow. So he came out of the stands, went in the locker room, put on his goalie outfit.
My question is, how much did they pay?
$500.
And he's having his moment in glory.
Yeah, and he got the game puck. They're gonna have him down to Carolina to honor him.
He may end up getting a full-time goalie job.
It could. Maybe there's the...
No, not if he gave up two like he did right away.
He's 42. I don't think so. He's 42. It's probably not going to happen.
But hey, Walker, maybe you'll get a minor league offer.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So that's the old, you know, when you're, you know, you heard about people saying, I wonder if they would call somebody out of the stands.
Right.
It's kind of like the dream you have, right? When you're 7 years old, you dream of going to your favorite college team and them calling you out of the stands because the quarterback gets hurt.
Yeah.
And it's all on your 7-year-old shoulders. And
you win the game.
You lead your team to victory. And then you wake up and realize it was a dream. It could never really happen in real life. That's how cruel dreams can be sometimes, figuratively and literally. All right, we're out of time. Thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
And Walker, appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate Jonathan Coker running the controls for us today and Fred's contribution. And we shall see you back here tomorrow, everybody.